You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We Sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening Ashe. To Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Well, it's the middle of the week. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Yeah, had a good weekend. Well, anyway, we're back. And with multiple issues and things that are happening, the election's coming up. Oh, next week, Wednesday, is 9/11 and our annual 9/11 inside job, bringing out the information that that 9/11 was not something that a handful of Saudis allegedly. First, they didn't talk about the Saudis. And, of course, because the United States and Saudi Arabia are friends, so to speak, but a handful of Saudis supposedly went to a flight school and learned how to fly jumbo passenger jets and then commandeered those jets on September 11, two going out of Boston and let those two attack the World Trade Center, building one and two. And, of course, building number seven went down. Talk about that. And, of course, Shanksville and the Pentagon, which, of course, to me is the most egregious, is the Pentagon. So we'll talk about all those things. That's next week, Wednesday, 9/11. Annual 9/11 inside job. Now, I mean, if you don't believe that 9/11 was an inside job, you believe the government's take on it, and many people, you know, do, because they have a trust for the government. But when you live as somebody who has been mistreated by this government, you know, the history of us as a people and what they have done to us, I have no trust whatsoever in this system. None. Zero. Zilch. So we'll deal with that then. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. This program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Next up program is tomorrow, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Mississippi on the Move, the Black Liberation Movement, with your host, Brother Geronimo Pratt, and the Geronimo, excuse me, your host is Patrick Lumumba with the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. Okay, Oshi, wake up, man. With the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. And that is on Thursdays from 8 to 10. Friday from 8 until Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturday from 7 to 9, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. The Sankofa Elders Council with Dr. Janine. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m. until Time for an Awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215 215-
215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans, Brother Bomani Tayemba has been taking our people to Africa for many, many years. And this next trip up, coming up, is November. November 20th to December 2nd. Going to Kemet. November 20th to December 2nd, 2024. Going to Kemet, $4,500. Then December 24th to January 4th, 2025, $4,800. Azinha. April 4th to April 14th, 2025, Kenya. May 24th to June 5th, May 24th to June 5th, 2025, Ghana. November 20th to December 1st. November 20th to the 5th. Now, there's two conflicting days. He hasn't corrected it yet. I'm not sure. But he has one listed, November 20th to December 1st, going to Tanzania. And then one, November 21st to December 1st, 2025, to Brazil. So I'm quite sure he'll fix that soon. That's Africa for the Africans. .org. If you want to see videos of previous tours, you can go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. If you want to see photos of previous tours, just go to facebook.com/Bomani. Or give Brother Bomani Tayemba a call at 404-931-9429. That's 404-931-9429. Africa for the Africans. Habeshaw. Habeshaw stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Habeshaw. They have a program October 12th coming up next month. Yeah, it's a festival, October 12th in Ghana from 12 o'clock to 6 p.m. in Ghana. We'll talk more about that. But go to the website, HabeshawIncorporated.org. Also, too, they have a Harvest Fest this month, September 21st. September 21st, Harvest Fest. So, HabeshawIncorporated.org. The Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development for Group Economics. They have 12 different projects in 6 countries with over 170 employees and over 260 members. They deal in the 4 areas of human necessity, human essentials. Food, water, clothing, and shelter. A Ledge Group, Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. The Minister of Wellness. The Minister of Wellness, Brother Nathaniel Jordan. The Minister of Wellness. Go to his website, theministerofwellness.com, and you can see great products that he has. I believe he's still on his mission. Said it's going to be a few months. And so he's in Kenya, the Minister of Wellness. Smi Pharmacy, SMAIFARMACY. SmiPharmacy.com. Brother Jabril, man, his website looks better and better. All kind of good products if you want to. Give Brother Jabril a call. Give him a call at 770-765-7751. 770-765-7751. Smi Pharmacy. Or drop him an email at smipharmacy@gmail.com. That's SMAIFARMACY@gmail.com. All right, family. The Moses West Foundation. The Moses West Foundation, creating the atmospheric water generating machine, helping us understand there's water all around us. the great essentials, the great essential of life can be tapped. And Brother Moses West has found the way to do it with his generating machine. That's right. He can get the moisture out of the air, goes through a filterization process, open the tap, out comes clean drinking water. The problem that humans have, there's water, but the real issue is, how can I gain access to clean drinking water, really usable water? We develop and implement an atmospheric water generation technology to provide water, sanitation, hygiene solutions worldwide, ensuring communities have access to essential services for health and well-being. The Moses West Foundation. Ashe. So, family, Wadadas. Talk about Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located here in the West End, Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located in the West End here, right across the street from Soul Vegetarian, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. 444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. Mama Nia. Check her out. She's got a fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, gift certificates, t-shirts, figurines, and so much more. Give her a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located... Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia, which is east of Atlanta, and off of I-20. You take I-20 going east, and you take exit 74. Make a left. See, you're going east, and when you make a left, now you're going north. And about a mile on the left will be the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore and Coffee Bar. Look, my good brother, Kazem Diajamu, proprietor. And you can give him a call at 770-305-6373. 770-305-6373. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar. Jump back in your ride, head back the other way. So you were going north, now you're going south. So if you're going south and you make another left, you're still going east. And take the next exit, exit 75, Turner Hill Road. Make a right, three lights. Another right, and on the left will be the new Black Wall Street Market. The new Black Wall Street Market. Check it out. Okay. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. Us Lifting Us, every Thursday night. Tomorrow night they have the Thursday night broadcast on Blog Talk Radio. That's Blog Talk Radio. BlogTalkRadio.com /ULU. You also can call, the programs on Thursday from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. And the number to call is 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us, Lifting Us. The Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, located in Macon, Georgia, open Tuesday through Sunday, 11 a.m. to 8 p.m., Tuesday through Sunday. From Brother PJ, he's got it going on. Give him a call at 478-256-1166, 478-256-1166. 66 Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Macon, Georgia. Sun Goddess Essentia One Stop Natural Shop is located 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Give my sister Shelly Amundset a call at 404-434-7963. And Gabby Aurelia, the work that she's doing with the children in Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go online. Go to Sonjay, Sonjay-Haiti, AYITI.org, Sonjay-Haiti.org. All right, family. Baba Barudi and Mama Ya. Of course, they have Akabin Institute and Akabin House, where they sell their books. And they're just doing great work, brothers and sisters, and they deserve to be supported. You know, they rely on the donations of brothers and sisters like us. They don't seek any government money. They know what's attached to that. And so they have the responsibility of educating our children in an African-centered manner. They need support. One of the ways, of course, is the books that Baba Barudi sells. And he is a prolific writer. Many books. And one I have before me is the Inya. He has two volumes. Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. I'm going to read the second, third, and the fourth today of the Inya Sasim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. September 2nd, a bad workman blames his tools, African proverb. Those without vision or courage blame everyone else for their incompetence. In terms of any discussion about potential warriors, this statement applies to those who are angry that we are not yet victorious. A deep-seated defeatism makes it impossible for them to live in peace with the makes it impossible for them to live in peace with the work ahead. Moreover, it depresses any energy they might have thought to commit to the work needing to be done now. They have already quit. If anything, they merely complain. They're angry and frustration is debilitating and rising from knowing, even if merely subconsciously, that they are too weak and cowardly to fight a winning battle to the death. Vanquished individuals are always too sorry to see the higher glory and honor of being a righteous warrior for their people, regardless of the immediate outcome, regardless of lifespan. They are always full of excuses for quitting. So instead of facing their frontline responsibilities, they blame those who came before them, whether living or transition, for their failure at now having already brought Africans into full sovereignty. Affirm, I accept responsibility for my errors, Ashe. Affirm, I accept responsibility for my errors. September 3rd, our ancestors are the compass. Our deities help clear the way. Our direction is left foot forward, Ashe. Latoya Hunter. Latoya Hamer. It is very sad that so many can only see humility as fake. As time has passed in our submersion into Yoruba's spiritual death zone, humility, the pretentious thought, word, and behavior which prioritizes over others, over self without losing self, of wholly seeing oneself as a messenger and worker serving a higher political cause for a people, but without the need to be seen, becomes suspect no matter where it is found. Although it is something which Ma'at tells us is a deep, reasonable, timeless, to be expected and highly prized African value, in Yoruba's reality, humility can only be seen as a pretense to gain notoriety and our sympathy from others. As the direct result of our judgments of others, having become corrupted against the human possibilities, we no longer believe in genuine personal honesty and benevolence without it being a ulterior calculation. Left foot forward is not simply a dormant, catchy slogan unearthed to give egos in our historical source. It carries deep meaning for the development of a humble direction for character relative to one's work in serving and deserving others. Unknown to those who do not know, it has a naturally occurring state of mind. Humility has its own rewards. The most important of these is simply knowing that you are doing the right thing in assisting those in need of your talents. Moreover, as warriors, we know that humility must be as political as ever, as every other quality of our character. It must be guided by a clean definition of friend and foe so that we will know where and with whom to apply our genius and our generosity. I say, affirm, I follow the path of that wisdom which is African. Affirm, I follow the path of that wisdom which is African. September 4th. In traditional African view, moral responsibility is corporate. A wrong done by the individual will have adverse effects on his or her community, and the community shares responsibility for the wrong committed by its members. What do we do to ourselves when we do not take personal and collective responsibilities for solving our own issues? When we allow enemies and their agents within our ranks who think for them to solve them for us, what does that do to our sense of community and the idea and a practice of right and wrong amongst ourselves? How does this affect our future responsibilities and the lives of our children in the face of an invasive immorality? A people who do not clean up after themselves leaves a mess everywhere for their ascendants to suffer and clean up. It's not taking responsibility for correcting them now. We are passing on the responsibility of correcting our errors, including those passed on to us, to our children, seemingly oblivious to what time does to offenses irresponsible left to fester. Left to fester. Affirm, I operate within a self-accountability community. I say, affirm, I operate within a self-accountability community. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Yes, yes, yes. I'm going to talk today about genocide. Genocide. You know, this trying to come up with a might be more appropriate definition of genocide. But of course, the European Jews have co-opted the word. In fact, the word was created by a European Jew, a Polish European Jew, Polish from Poland. And so it's still very hard to say, well, is that genocide? Is that genocide? What I was led to believe what genocide was that you wiped out a people. You exterminate them. That is genocide. And so the European Jews who believe that they're victims of genocide, I mean, they're here. They're still practicing their theology. In fact, European Jews are the strongest people on the planet in terms of their involvement, in terms of what they control. Look at this country. Look at Europe. Look at everywhere. European Jews. How did European Jews come to take Palestine from the Palestinians? And then to exercise, see, that's the irony. That's what's ironic. European Jews are exercising genocide on the Palestinian people for land that they took. And so this is the final part of it. That's why there's such a resistance from Netanyahu, that asshole. People all over the world are saying, stop. Stop. Let us try to get the people out. Let's make concessions. Let's do this, that, and the other. It ain't happening. It ain't happening. It's almost to say that that thing that happened, what was that? Back on the 6th of June. When was that? I can't remember now. Since this war has been raging. Oh, it's all been over years. October 6th, wasn't it? I don't know. Anyway, the bottom line is, I believe the European Jews are going to take all of Palestine. There will not be any Palestinians. There are people who can call themselves Palestinians, but they have no connection. Their land has been taken, just like what European Jews have, just like what Europeans have done globally. Take people's land. Some of them have suffered. In fact, the only genocides that I know of were committed by Europeans in the Caribbean, what is now the Dominican Republic and island of Haiti. They had some people there prior to that when Columbus came there. Lakwa Indians. And they wiped them out. Tasmania, the island of Tasmania. Truganini and her people. And you know her story. She had a big ass. And they put her on display. Even when she died. They put her on display. They prayed around like she was a circus. You know, what's funny to me, and that's not funny, it sure the hell ain't funny, but what's interesting to me, that's a better choice of words there, what's interesting to me is that, you know, the European who has been dogmatic but professes to be, you know, Christian and Christ-like and humbling and so forth, has been the most evil and dogmatic person on the planet. When you look at the history, they have the smallest amount of people, but have caused the most havoc, the most destruction on the planet. One thing that helped facilitate their position and rise, boat making, which they did not get on their own, and weapons, which they did because they got gunpowder from the Chinese, who used it for fireworks and celebration. They use it to fashion superior weaponry. And to, you know, I've always said one thing about the European, he has always found a better way to kill your ass. That's right. He has always found a better way to kill you. And he continued to do so in so many ways. So if somebody is, you know, genocidal, it ain't other parts of humanity. Although there's been some situations in Cambodia, you know, there's been some other situations where you could honestly and talk about genocide, you know. But before I do that, I want to talk over some things that I usually read and haven't read in a while. Looking at my brother Renoko, who's an ancestor, passed away, just like Dr. Asa Hilliard, doing what they loved. Him and Dr. Hilliard, they were not together. But they were both in Kemet leading tours, and they both fell ill and passed away in Kemet. You know, Brother Renoko. He says, Renoko says, history is a light that illuminates the past and a key that unlocks the door to the future. My brother Rinoco. He also sent this quote. He got, I can't remember the brother that wrote it, but this is also what Rinoco sent. He says, "What you do for yourself depends upon what you think of yourself. And what you think of yourself depends upon what you know of yourself. And what you know of yourself depends upon what you have been told." Because a lot of us don't know. We look at what we've been told. That's why a lot of us don't put a history before our captivity, as if our captivity is the beginning of our history. That we were running around the jungle with a rag up our ass and a bone through our nose, never having created a civilization of any kind. You see, even to this very day, to this very moment, they co-opted Kemet. They took it. Even though in 1974, Dr. Theophilo Bingo, who is still living, and Dr. Sheikh Anjit Jop, both of those men valiantly kicked ass at the symposium in 1974, are who are the people of ancient Kemet? Who are the people of Egypt? See, I look at it like this. There's two things. There's Kemet and there's Egypt. There's Kemet and Egypt. Kemet is a land constantly emerging from all the things that it has created and the people. Divine people know how that knew how to live amongst themselves and live with others. And if they didn't get along, they put a buffer around Kemet, or they went out and kicked your ass. But as the dynasties slowly went, I ain't saying extinct, because they didn't ever go extinct, but they were in decline. And so Dynasty 30th ended the Kemetic dynasties. And then the Greeks come in, the Ptolemies. And that's when you get Egypt. It is a Greek word. That's when you get Egypt. So the classical periods that this dude was putting in on Facebook, claiming that it was all part of his history, his glory. No, it was not. And of course, they were adamant that it was not African, just like Zaid Awas, that asshole. Yes, it is Egyptian, but it is not black. So there's Egypt, and then there's Kemet. The latter part of the Egypt was the part of others. And then, of course, the Greeks, the Romans, the Arabs, all of them taking time. And, of course, we vacated over. Moved to vacate. And then when Islam comes on the scene, it wipes straight across from the so-called Middle East all the way into the Iberian Peninsula. But as we have explained numerous times in talking about the development of Kemet, the temple building, the pyramid building, all the things that made it a great civilization for thousands of years, that it was African, that it was dark-skinned people recognizing that no other group of people could have withstood to build pyramids, to build tombs, to be out in that sun like that for long periods of time. Us. And not as slaves. We were not slaves. The temples and tombs and pyramids, all the things that were constructed, were not built by slaves. They were built by the people themselves in honor. So, depends upon what you've been told. You have a philosophy. Philosophy is what you think. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern, and your behavior pattern determines your action. It begins with what you think and ends with your actions, what you do. What you do. If your philosophy is that our men ain't nothing, then you treat them that way, just like our sisters ain't nothing, and you treat them that way. But if your philosophy is our men should be supported, our women should be protected, then your actions will be, you will treat them with respect, and you will treat them with the support that they need. It begins with what you think, your philosophy. It ends with what you do. Yeah. We need each other. We need to do that. So let me, before we go to a break, get off into the idea of genocide. And you know what's interesting? I got the piece from Brother Mickey Dean talking about the situation in Palestine. You know, he says, please take a few minutes to read the article in the link below. I tried to read it, but you got to go through some stuff, so I couldn't get a chance to get all the information out of it. It provides some insight into the Democratic Party's thinking on foreign policy. Although both major parties are controlled by the mostly Caucasian corporate elite, both parties in, you know, one of the things, and this is one of the European Jews, too, from back in the day. I don't know if it was Vanderbilt or Oppenheimer. I don't know. But they would fund both sides of the issue. So no matter who wins, they win. No matter who wins, they win. There are significant policy differences between the parties with regard to domestic policy. Reproductive rights, civil rights. However, when it comes to foreign policy, there is little to no difference between the parties. Both support U.S. imperialism policies designed to control the resources of other countries. That's why the U.S. government has 800 military bases around the world. And the Democratic Party is often more hawkish than Republicans. Yeah, Lyndon Baines Johnson in Vietnam, Barack Obama, an expansion of the African Command, AFRICOM, designed to compete with Russia and China for control of Africa's resources, and Biden and his full throttle support of Israel's genocide. And that's just not Biden's support. I mean, that's an American standard. We stand by Israel. I know my Democratic friends would hate to see their party lose this election. Yeah, I know they would. Over its ironclad. You know what an ironclad means? I mean, it is rock solid. You can't break the support that America has for Israel. And no matter what Israel does, they're going to support it. Many folks in the so-called swing states are not happy. We'll see what happens. That's right. in this upcoming election. We'll see what happens. Genocide is the intentional destruction of a people, either whole or in part. My contention has been, well, genocide, it was, you know, side means death. Generations killed them all. Extinction. So, but because the European Jews took that, and so they were always in part. No, the European Jew was not totally eliminated. No, you know. They have the idea, if the idea that helps with the sympathy that the world has for them. But no, they were not eliminated. The Political Instability Task Force estimated that 43 genocides occurred. No, they didn't. But then again, using that fluffy definition instead of a hard definition, saying genocide means you're going to be exterminated, you're going to be wiped out. Because 43 genocides? No. There's 43 mass murders from 1956 to 2016, resulting in about 50 million people dead. The UNACUR estimates that a further 50 million people have been displaced by such episodes of violence up to 2008. Genocide is widely considered to be the epitome of human evil. Genocide has been referred to as the crime of crimes. Incitement to genocide is recognized as a separate crime under international law. And what does it not require genocide to have taken place to be prosecutable? Can't get that word out. That's right. Which does not require genocide to have taken place to be prosecutable. In 1948, you know, this is when European Jews, the United Nations Genocide Convention defined genocide as any of five acts committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group. These five acts were killing members of the group, causing them serious bodily or mental harm, imposing living conditions intended to destroy the group, preventing births, and forcibly transferring their children out of the group. If you remember what I just read to you, and when you think of the indigenous people here, that's genocide. America has exercised genocide over the indigenous people here. Remember all the children in those schools in Canada? Young children try to educate or eliminate the indigenousness. The indigenousness from them, and you know, because I mean, those kids can, you know, they ain't dark skinned, which for us was a problem for Caucasians. Never a problem for us. It made a problem for us because of how they treated us, making us feel ashamed of who we are. But the indigenous people, they did the same thing, but not as bad, because, you know, they could be absorbed into the culture. They were not Caucasian, of course, and some of them had reddish skin or more melanated skin. In fact, when you look at some of the early pictures of indigenous people, yeah, very dark skin. These five acts were killing members of the group, causing them serious or bodily mental harm, imposing living conditions intended to destroy the group, preventing births, and forcibly taking their children out of the group. Victims are targeted because of their real or perceived membership of a group. It's not random. Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm a play a little piece that I found. Let's see. We can do that. Yeah. These are 10 reasons. Yeah, it's our 10 stages of genocide that we're going to go through here. 10 stages of genocide. Check this out.
When living conditions worsen and the economy fails, people try to find reasons for their troubles. This is when political extremists can become popular, as they blame certain groups of people and promise that by getting rid of them, society's problems will go away. This can lead to the deliberate elimination of those who are different because of their race, religion, sexuality, or disability, a phenomenon known as genocide. The 10 stages of genocide are a framework for understanding how crimes against humanity happen, so we can spot early warning signs and potentially prevent them. Stage 1 is classification. Extremists divide people into separate groups based on their different characteristics. This often happens to create an us versus them mentality, or to find someone to blame for social problems. The second stage is symbolization. This involves assigning symbols or names to members of the other group. The goal is to split the society and make it clear who belongs to who. Third is discrimination. The dominant group uses its power to deny others certain rights or privileges. Particular new laws may limit the freedom of the marginalized ones. Instances of bullying increase and the societal divide widens. Fourth is dehumanization. The targeted group is portrayed as less than human, often compared to animals or diseases. Stripping away the human qualities of a person makes it easier to justify violence against them. Fifth is organization. This stage can involve violent mobs that are tolerated by the ruling class, or even the creation of state-sponsored militias. In some instances, perpetrators now carefully start to plan the next steps of the genocide. Sixth is polarization. Extremists now demonize the targeted group and try to fully divide society by demanding that everyone must take a side. Moderators who want to reduce the tensions are often identified as enemies and silenced. Seventh is preparation. The criminals now plan for mass murder. They may identify victims by name or number, find where they live, and acquire weapons or build facilities to aid their efforts. Eighth is persecution. Violence escalates. The targeted group is systematically subjected to harassment, displacement, or other forms of abuse. Often all of that happens under the disguise of security measures. Ninth is extermination. The mass killing begins. The culprits view their victims as less than human, believing they are cleansing the world of an undesirable element, and in doing so justify the use of disproportionate violence. 10th is denial. Those responsible for the cruelty deny their crimes, destroy evidence, blame the victims, and attempt to rewrite history, justifying their actions as necessary for the greater good. This is why, in the aftermath of genocide, the criminals must be made accountable and the trauma must be addressed. Then the survivors may heal and society can attempt to reunite. Note that the 10 stages may not occur linearly. They can happen simultaneously. Dr. Gregory Stanton, who observed the phenomenon, suggested preventative measures to battle each stage, even though he believed that ultimately only an international intervention can stop such a disaster. In Germany, Cambodia, Rwanda, and other places, help from outside often arrived too late for too many, which is why Stanton also founded Genocide Watch, a non-profit to help prevent the next tragedy from unfolding. What do you think? Is knowledge enough to prevent genocidal events? And if not, what other measures can we take to avoid the next human catastrophe? Share your thoughts in the comments below.
Well, the bottom line is that the ones that are doing it, you know, the ones that are doing genocide against humanity, they don't give a damn, they don't consider it genocide. They think it's eliminating people that they feel are against them or in their way, preventing them from reaching whatever goals. And also, too, a lot of times they want to get rid of them because they have resources. You know, what was supposed to be a world body, you know, to deal with world issues, unfortunately, is really not a world body to deal with world issues. The UN, the Security Council, all that is for the benefit, once again, of Europe and European people. Yes, they have the Security Council of all the stronger nations, and they can veto any damn thing. So because you have all these nations does not mean they all have an equal vote. They don't. Yeah. I'm going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll have more discussion on genocide. You can give us your African perspective on it by giving us a call at 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're talking about genocide. And like I said, there's many things that I thought it was just a cut and dry, but no, there's a lot of things involved in the definition of genocide. Here's another one. And this other definitions of genocide. Writing in 1998, Kurt Johansson and Karen Bjornson, some Swedes, stated that the CPPCG was a legal instrument resulting from a diplomatic compromise. As such, the wording of the treaty is not intended to be a definition suitable for a research tool, although it is used for this purpose, as it has international legal and credibility that others lack. Other genocide definitions have also been proposed. They go on to say that none of these alternative definitions has gained widespread support. They postulate that the major reason why no generally accepted genocide definition has emerged is because academics have adjusted their focus to emphasize different periods and have found it expedient to use slightly different definitions. For example, Frank Chalk and Kurt Johansson studied all human history, while Leo Kerper and Randall Rummel concentrated on the 21st century. Helen Fine and Barbara Huff and Ted Garr looked at post-World War II events. This has been supported by later scholars. Writing in 2002 also highlights the difficulty there has been in trying to develop a common definition for genocide among specialists. And see, that's how that works. Yeah. All the other genocides. So you can call them genocides, even though people are still there. They still have, you know, their culture. They still have their traditions. You know, our situation, even though we have bounced back in terms of population, especially here in this country, you know, we're not supposed to be here. Many people understand that and talk about that. We're not supposed to be here. We're supposed to be gone and not back to Africa either. Just died off. But we have the youngest population. We have the youngest population globally. That's why Africa is going to be the key. And that's why us as Africans, we don't have the youngest population. We have one of the youngest populations here in this country as well. I mean, but if you think, that we're going to take this over, all we got to do is wait them out and, you know, because they have been experiencing negative population growth for quite a few decades. That's right, decades. Where two die, only one is born. Something to some ratio of that kind of effect. So I don't think that's going to happen, family. Yeah. They'll figure something out, won't they? Yeah. We'll wait and see. But see, instead of waiting and seeing and shit, we need to get our stuff together to prepare not to take this over. This is theirs. They will fight tooth and nail to maintain this. But we have every right to return to the continent of Africa. We have every right to deal with the Arabs in the north and anybody else within the continent. We have every right to challenge Arabs, Europeans, Asians. We have every right, and that's what we should be doing and preparing to do so. Everybody wants Africa. The scramble, the new scramble for Africa. Kind of went over that a few weeks ago. Yeah. Genocide. And that's what they will enact upon us, is genocide. Cultural genocide or cultural side is a concept described by Polish lawyer Raphael Lemkin. Lemkin in 1944, in the same book that coined the term genocide, the destruction of culture was a central component in Lemkin's formulation of genocide. Through the precise definition of cultural genocide remains contested, the United Nations makes it clear that genocide is the intent to destroy a national, ethnic, racial, or religious group. It does not include political groups or so-called cultural genocide, that the cultural destruction does not suffice, nor does the intent to simply disperse a group. Thus, this is what makes the crime of genocide so unique. While the Armenian Genocide Museum defines culture side has acts of measures undertaken to destroy nations or ethnic groups culture through spiritual, national, and cultural destruction, which appears to be essentially the same as ethnocide. Some ethnogenesis, such as Robert and Julian, use the term ethnocide as a substitute for cultural genocide. Although this usage has been criticized as risking the confusion between ethnicity and culture. Cultural side, or cultural genocide, and ethnocide have in the past been utilized in distinct contexts. Cultural genocide without ethnocide is conceivable when a distinct ethnic identity is kept, but distinct cultural elements are eliminated. Cultural genocide involves the eradication and destruction of a culture's artifacts, such as books, artworks, structures. The issues that address in multiple international treaties, including the Geneva Convention and the Rome Statute, which define war crimes associated with the destruction of culture. Cultural genocide may also involve forced assimilation. Forced assimilation, that's the word I like to use. As well as the suppression of a language. You know, we were forced to assimilate, but not into the dominant culture, but to develop a subculture beneath the dominant culture, because you were not allowed. Well, Brother Oshi, there's no discrimination today into the dominant culture. You can be a part of the dominant culture and act and do things the way Europeans do. To some extent, that is true. To some extent. Cultural side involves the eradication and destruction of cultural artifacts, books, statues. The issue is addressed in multiple international treaties, including Geneva Convention and the Rome Statute, which define war crimes associated with the destruction of culture. Cultural genocide may also involve forced assimilation, as well as the suppression of a language or a cultural activities that does not conform to the destroyer's notion of what is appropriate. Among many other potential reasons, cultural genocide may be committed for religious motivations. Iconography, which is based on iconoclasm, as part of a campaign of ethnic cleansing in an attempt to remove the evidence of a people from a specific location or history as part of an effort to implement a year zero in which the past and its associated culture is deleted and history is reset, or the past is erased and a new history is reset. The drafters of the 1948 Genocide Convention initially considered using the term, but later dropped it from inclusion. The term cultural genocide has been considered in various drafted United Nations declarations, but it is not used by the UN Genocide Convention. A lot of information here, family. You know. But the reality is, I believe if we do not close ranks, pull our resources, and come together for the benefit of us as a people and who we are, genocide is what we'll experience, family. No doubt about it. Genocide is what we'll experience. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Good afternoon, Brother Irv. How you doing, man? How are you, brother?
Baba Oshie.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me, Baba Oshie?
Very well, my brother. Go ahead.
Fantastic. I'm glad you had a good trip, Baba.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad you had a good trip. I just caught you saying genocide. There are many types of genocide, the physical genocide and the cultural genocide. And as I'm reading this book with Brother Amos Wilson, who deals with the mind, he deals with why we think the way we think. Yeah.
Menticide.
He deals with why did you allow your children to be taught the mindset that is given them? Mm-hmm. I was just having a conversation this morning, believe it or not, about season. There's a season for everything. There was a season for white folks to do what they did, and there's a season for us as American Africans to do what we do. And I believe our season is now. Why do I think it's now? Because of the three kings in Africa, Chad, Burkina Faso, and
Mali,
Niger.
Is it Chad? I thought it was Mali.
Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso.
Okay,
not Niger.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And you know what, Baba Oshie? I'm glad you correct me on air, because I truly do not want to give out misinformation.
Right.
Not on purpose.
I know.
And we have to get it right. Mm-hmm. Because what you are saying, and I used to do it, so I know other people do it. I would say things that I hear and repeat it without even researching it, because I trust the person who said it. So mm-hmm. I try my best when I'm on this air. I try to say everything that's true to my knowledge, and if I'm wrong, I stand corrected. I have no problem with that. But these three kings in Africa right now are doing, they're aligning themselves with people who are giving them a better deal, giving them a better shake. I mean, people who have not taken their people and tried to enslave them and grow them like their chattel, like their dogs or cats, or try to breed them. Mm-hmm. They're making deals with other people, and they're not making these lifelong deals where, you know, you're in and you're in forever. Those types of things, and they're changing their money. It's a lot that's going on in Africa right now, and you know who the biggest fight's going to be, Baba Oshie. It's going to be the people who look like us, because you look like me doesn't mean you have the mind that I have.
Right.
Once this is what this is about. This is it's really about the mind. Once you and because there are so many young people in Africa, there's so many young people. They're at a place where their minds are impressionable. You tell a young person that they can run and break a record, they'll do everything in their power to break that record and run because they believe they can do it. So it's the same way with the African mind. We are told that we're a permanent underclass. So what do in this country? You start acting like one. You're told that you can't do this, so you start not doing it. So what I believe that the once the shackles come off the mind, and I know I sound like a broken record, people, but my God, man, that's how we learn through repetition.
Right.
And I will say this until my last breath. We have to take the shackles off of our minds before we can even talk about coming together. Well, we got to come together. What are we coming together for if you still bringing that same mindset that you had that put you where you were?
Right.
If you've got that same, yeah, come on, Baba Oshie, yeah. you know it like I know it. I'd mm-hmm. rather have two people doing work than 30 people sitting around looking at me waiting for me to do something.
I say.
You
I
know,
say.
Because somebody has to take the hit. There's a sacrifice to be made for you. Most revolutionaries die broke. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
This, yeah. If you in this to make a bunch of money,
no,
then you're not in this for the right reason.
Right.
Yeah.
You're not. So, and I don't mean to jump all over the place, Baba Oshie, but it's always, for me, I'm not going to see it, and I know I'm not going to see it, but I know it exists. I know that we as a people have leveled this playing field. We as a people have gotten through to enough American Africans that they're making noise now. They're moving different. Before, we followed in lockstep. You know, one day we're all going to play with white children. Yeah. That had its time. That had its place.
Yeah.
But now we're in a different place where we're more militant, where we have to say the uncomfortable things. We have to make the people who are running this know that if you get uncomfortable because I said something, then maybe you need to get yourself right.
I say.
Because I know I'm on the side of righteousness. I'm reading a book it's downstairs right now, Before Christianity. Where's my book?
Christianity.
And they're talking about Heru and all the
African deities,
where they got all this Christianity from, in actuality,
right.
all the manger stories and the Virgin Mother stories have been here way before Christ,
right?
And I didn't know that those things weren't taught in school. I'm like, why don't they teach us that? Because it goes directly against the things that keep your mind in shackles,
right?
Isn't that interesting, Baba Oshie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, we're. I believe I think there's not a rumbling. There's an earthquake happening right now. I believe even when brothers come on this air and disagree with me, I welcome that.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in your disagreement, we will find a place where we can come together and move. Even just by you coming on here disagreeing with me shows that you are a warrior.
Right.
You are a liberator. Why are you even listening? If you don't believe what I say, no, you believe it, and you see it happening. You can feel that American Africans are understanding what they were told was a lie. The whole thing was a lie. All this is a lie. But if you think I'm going to get on this radio, Baba Oshie, and dog my brother out because he's where I used to be, that's not going to happen.
Right on. Right on.
I'm not going to. I used to be, we doing good. I'm doing good. I am okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing.
Right.
Then when I realized that it wasn't about I, it's about we. It's not about I, it's about us.
Mm-hmm.
I can't rise. And I truly believe this. Louis Farrakhan said it, but it was so true. We can't rise no higher than the condition of our people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a true statement. And we need to understand that as a people. I'm not saying I know everything, but I know what I know.
Yeah.
And
see,
we
I
as
love
a people.
That quote too, but see, the problem is that individually, many individuals, they rise. I got mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, I'm doing well. And so.
Remember this one, Baba Oshie? I got mine. You got yours to get.
Yeah.
Huh? My teachers used to say that to me.
Right.
My teachers, why would you say that to a young black man?
Mm-hmm.
I got mine, you got yours to get. How about I got mine and we can get yours together?
Yeah.
Huh?
See,
and you wonder why the black children think like they think. Because that's what you taught.
Mm-hmm.
And these are teachers who thought they were doing you a favor by telling you that. I got mine to get from where? Because I'm in here acting stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm acting stupid in school. That's why I'm not getting it. I'm a disruption.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a way to deal with our people. But then when you let them start giving us drugs and Ritalin and all that type of stuff, then you alter, you change the reasoning and how we rationale. You know, how things don't make sense when you're on drugs. Mm-hmm. They don't have to.
Yeah.
They don't have to. But, Bob Oshie, we're in a good place, man. I believe that America, yeah, we're in a good place. Bob, you know like I know. These white folks done threw everything at the American African but the kitchen sink. And we're still here.
Right.
And we're still fighting.
We're fighting to recapture our African minds. We're fighting to recapture our African minds. So we know that by doing so, we'll be able, as a people, man, to chart our own course, to do things on our own, where we don't have to rely on anybody outside of us. We really have all that we need. The only thing that we don't have is our right minds. The only thing that we don't have, you know, because we've been manipulated and undermined and scrutinized and all of that, man. To make us think
it's amazing you said that. You said we have everything we need, we just have to have our right mind. And I thought when you said that, I was thinking about black people have money, we have property,
yeah,
we got cars, we got businesses, mm-hmm. we got everything we need except our right mind. Mm-hmm. Once we get our right mind, all of it falls in place.
Exactly.
It all falls in place. It's not about me fighting my brother. It's not about me fighting you. Mm-hmm. And it's not about us fighting in public. Stop it. It's like we're dancing for white people. Look at them. They look at them fighting each other. They fighting over that cheese. Mm-hmm. I'm not, there's nothing you have that I will fight over. It's what I'll fight over, which is my liberation, my freedom, my self-determination. Those are the things I will fight for.
Ashe.
But your little paper money?
No.
I'm gonna fight for this. I get my paper. I don't put brothers down who are in that place because Baba Oshie, I said it earlier. I was there.
Yeah.
I was just like I sound just like man. I'm getting mine. And what I didn't understand that I can't get mine until you get yours. If my brother is in trouble, I'm in trouble. Yep. If my homeland, like, why do you think the Jewish people are fighting over what they can claim to be their homeland? Mm. Because homeland means something. I was listening to John Henry Clark, man, and I'm telling you, I can't listen to John Henry Clark, Brother Oshie. That brother was just profound.
I love
him,
man.
He was profound.
I could listen to him all day. He was tremendous, man, that Southern draw.
Oh, he was profound.
Wasn't he?
He was profound.
Yeah. That Southern draw, brother, is captivating. Oh. I listened to Dr. Clark. Well, you know, I told you, Irv, one of the highlights of my life, aside from my two daughters being born and my grandsons, is having lunch with Dr. Clark at the Indiana Black Expo back in the 90s and to literally sit at the feet of a master, you know, and talk with him.
Wow.
That was something that I will always cherish and remember. You know.
Did you win a contest or something, or you just walked up on him and said, "Look, man"?
No, what it was the organizers of the Indiana Black Expo. I knew them, you know.
Okay.
And so they made it happen, and the New Jack Scholars were coming into existence. The New Jack Scholars is Brother Greg Kamathi Carr, Brother Mario Beatty. They're now the head of ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization. Dr. Clark, Dr. Greg Kamathi Carr, you see him on many venues. He also has a radio piece he does. And, you know, and so these emerging scholars, the emerging times that it was, in fact, at that expo, it was unbelievable. Anthony Broder had just came out. He was there with Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization, that book, which is fantastic. Khaled Abdul-Muhammad was there. In fact, he introduced Tupac
Tupac Shakur really? Was there. Yeah. Yeah, that Indiana Black Expo was something else, man. I will always remember that. And in fact, special to me was Muhammad Ali was there. Muhammad Ali had a boxing program at the Indiana Black Expo at the time. And one of the brothers from Milwaukee, you know, he was there. And in fact, I worked a corner for him. Yeah, Al Moreland. I worked a corner for him. But also, too, Money Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather, and his really? Father were there. Yeah, he was an amateur at the time. This is the 90s.
Oh, wow.
It's the 90s, man. And I tell you, it was just, man, fantastic. But Dr. John Henry Clark, man, what a beautiful man, what a great man. And I would say, as far as I'm concerned, and I know Mama Marimba Ani would say the same thing, because that was her Jegna. That was her Jegna, mm-hmm. man. You know, she has such a reverence for that man, and I don't blame her, because I do too, for all that he has done for us and our people. You know, he's fantastic. And so, you know, and I know that you've been reading some of the great scholars. You're dealing with Dr. Amos Wilson right now. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What I get, Brother Irv, from these great scholars and Francis Cresswells and all the African center scholars. Because there are some other scholars that came along and not to disparage them, but they were so well trained by the academy, so well trained by Caucasians. They write in their way and they speak in a way that there is hope for the future of whites and blacks getting along and sharing and so forth. Yeah, you're right. But listen to the African Center scholars, man, gives me a lot of hope. And many of them continue on in their lives and they eventually die, but still, our population is young, and if we have educators that expose our young to these scholars, to Francis Cresswellsing, you know, to Dr. John Henry Clark and all the others, you know, then the minds of those young men and women, as they mature, as they come up, will be right. If you listen to them, you will be right. And the thing on this is that if you're open-minded enough and once you start listening to them, you can't go back. You can't think the way you used to think. Because now you've been infused with knowledge of self. And now you want more. I'm not asking us to, you know, get name changes, develop Africa. I think that's something that if you want to do, you should do. You know. But the bottom line is, it's a mind change. And once your mind is right, everything else falls into place. You are a protector of yourself and your family, your community, your people, your possessions, your resources. You begin to think all in that way, you know? And so you know that even though they're trying to enact genocide on you, and on your people, but because of how you think and how you behave and how you act and how you respond, you begin to challenge that, and there ain't a damn thing they can really do about it unless they just go ahead and kill you. And which, of course, we don't put anything past Caucasians to do whatever they feel they have to do to maintain dominance and control. So, yeah.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely correct. And they've proven, Urugu has proven to you time and time, and Amos Wilson talks about this. They've proven to you time and time again what they will do mm-hmm. to you, and you continuously in your mind keep believing that if I love them enough, and you know, somebody comes on the air, I'm not sure who it is, like a battered wife, Mm-hmm. If I just keep loving you, eventually you're going to love me back.
Right.
I'm going to fight for a country that doesn't love me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn the other cheek. I'm going to cognitive dissonance and forget what you've done to my people.
Yep.
I'm going to forget the lynchings and the Emmett Tills and the Medgar Evers. I can name them. I can keep naming them because those were the older ones.
Right.
They're up to date. We got some up to date murders and lynchings of American
Taylor.
Country.
Yeah.
Come on now.
George Floyd.
Come on, we can do it. They just killed a lady with boiling water.
Right.
They just killed, shot and killed her.
Yeah.
And then you don't see it on the news anymore. All we're seeing is Kamala and her Jewish husband. And you have no choice. This is a coronation. It's an election, not an election. She's running against a trained monkey, and he wasn't trained well. But then we get what we get, Baba Oshie. I'm not saying I will never put her down. If she wants to say she's American African, then she can. She can say whatever she wants. This is not my issue. My issue is for us to get ourselves in a position in our mind where we believe we can leave. Because when I read about Marcus Garvey, Marcus Garvey wanted to leave. And how did he get to that place? How did he get to a place, Baba Oshie, where he thought that if I left, I would be better off? How can it be better off than here?
Yeah.
Because he took the chains off his mind.
Yes.
Once you take the chains off your mind, this place don't look as good as you thought it did. Because you start understanding that you will always be a second-class citizen here. You will never, ever have a level playing field in this country. Now, you can think you do, or you can act like you do, but get pulled over by the police and see how fast your heart beats.
Yeah, I heard that.
And you pay him. Mm. You pay him, Baba Oshie.
Yeah.
Out your $10.
That's right.
And my heart. Police pulled me over, Baba Oshie. My heart was beating so fast. I think it wasn't because I know too much, or because I was literally afraid. And I'm not running around here afraid to die, but I don't want to die today.
I know that's right.
And I was afraid that I might say the wrong thing to this brother, black man or white man with a Glock 9mm, or reach for my license, and he decides to shoot me 13, 14 times. And the only story they get is the one he tells, because I'm gone. And he didn't have a camera on. Huh?
And he feared for his life.
He feared for his life.
No gun, no instrument at all found in your vehicle, but he feared for his life. Thought you were reaching in
the glove
compartment
for something.
Right.
Huh?
Exactly.
He gets paid leave and goes to another department. So, Baba Oshie, these are the real things that we deal with. All this ideology and all the things that happened years ago, this is real time. This is in real time. This is today.
Mm-hmm.
But nah, Baba, we're in a good place as a people. We're in a really good place, I do believe, because the shackles have come off of a lot of us. There's a lot of us that have to take them off. But Francis Crest Boston was in a historically black college that is financed by Coca-Cola. But what she did was she touched young people, and those are impressionable minds. They say it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks. It is. But the young people have a clean slate. Their minds are open. So we as American Africans have to talk to them and not let Urugu teach them the individualism that Urugu wants us to practice. Because he knows that if we ever come together, which we are now, we're going to be stronger than Urugu has ever been.
Ever been.
Yes.
I agree.
Ever been.
Yeah.
Baba Oshie. We're in a good place. I want to let somebody else get in, Baba Oshie.
All right, dear brother. Appreciate you.
Sorry, I can't see the board.
Okay, brother.
Yeah, that's the time. I'm holding on. I'm
all
listening.
Right.
Go ahead.
Peace.
Yes, sir.
Good afternoon.
Oshie, what's happening, bro? How was your vacation?
Oh, everything was fine. Jay, what's happening?
Not much, man. Listen, you were talking earlier about genocide. Do you know that whole genocidal movement that's going on against the Palestinians, the narrative is now being put forward that it's the Palestinians' fault?
I'm not surprised. Of course you can blame the people that you're enacting genocide on them, that it is their fault. They brought this on themselves, or things that they've done or said or how they've lived. They brought this on themselves, you know.
But the crazy thing is that, you know, the media is such a dishonest broker that it doesn't even tell the half a truth of what Israel is doing to the Palestinians. And then the thing that gets me the most is the death toll. I mean, the death toll, they say it is something like 40,000
Palestinians have died.
We both know it's probably triple that.
Right.
And on top of that, if Pinocchio Trump get in the office, he gonna just let them wipe the people out.
Sure.
Because his son-in-law has already set the boundaries that we want to get rid of all of the Palestinians and then replace them with beachfront property.
Yeah. Well, I think it doesn't matter whether it's Trump or it's Harris. Either Democrat or Republican.
I think that the so-called Democratic narrative can't let them do a genocide. I think she will allow him to continue to murder the Palestinians, but not in the total wipeout like Trump will. But
okay.
The thing is this, though. The key to the whole Harris thing is, if she does get in the office, will she cut off the weapons to Israel? Will she make that type of bold statement to say that unless there's a ceasefire, you can't get no more weapons?
Mm-hmm.
That right there is going to be the key, to be honest with you, to our total presidency, in my opinion, because they're gonna have to do something. Mm-hmm. It can't continue to go on in this fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, and I think it's what, 4 weeks, it'll be a year. So you're saying this conflict is going on for a whole year. There hasn't been no ceasefire. And on top of that, you're in a situation to where, as the election's about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, something has to give. But the thing is, when you talk about genocide, I think this right now, in a sense, is a war-type genocide that I think is only being done, I think, in the Sudan. I think the Sudan is facing the same type of genocide in it. And to be honest with you, it may be even worse than genocide in Sudan than it is in Palestine, because we don't really know, if we're going to be honest. Ain't nobody really talking about the genocide in the Sudan on the level that they are in Palestine. So, I mean, you know, I see a little things on the internet and things like that. But I mean, as far as, you know, what's going on, that genocide is not being reported. But genocide is a serious thing, bro.
Well, definitely.
I don't even think most of our people understand.
Well, that's because, as I read earlier, there were multiple definitions of the word genocide. In fact, I had a hard and fixed definition for myself, saying, hey, genocide is that you're going to remove, replace, and eliminate, exterminate a group of people, period. Just like they did the Akwa Indians in what is now Haiti and the Dominican Republic. You know, just like they did with Tasmania, with, you know, the African people that were there. True Ganini and her people wiped them out. They wiped out all of the people. That's an act of real genocide. But because you have these other definitions, it could be limited to that group of people and not wipe them out totally. Maybe interfere with their culture, interfere with their birthing, interfere with their families, you know. So there's a different forms of genocide, so to speak, as they say. But my contention is, if you are planning, like what is happening right now in Palestine, to get rid of all Palestinians, and then so you could now firmly make that the state of Israel. That's
genocide.
That's genocide.
What's going on in Palestine? What's going on in Palestine is genocide. Now they say it's a war against Hamas, but no, that's genocide, because they're looking to remove all Palestinians from Gaza in that region. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, if you see where they are now, the Palestinian people, they're basically in a box ready to be exterminated at, you know, a drop of the hat. Yeah. I mean, it's not like they spread out in Palestine. They're basically within a small area, cramped up with one another in the most inhumane conditions that people don't even honestly talk about. Yeah. I mean, you know, water is controlled. Just every
the whole infrastructure, all of it, all their whole infrastructure has been destroyed. Right. You know, but let me catch some other callers, Jay.
Let me let you go, but we must continue to speak about this, because we got to now introduce our African brothers and sisters who are facing this same type of tragedy.
Exactly.
But have a good day.
You too, Brother Jay.
And glad to see you back, brother.
Right on.
And listen, one last thing. As far as Dr. Clark go, just put it to yourself like this. Imagine when you met Clark, you was what, in your 40s or something like that, right?
Yep.
When I met Clark, I was sitting in his classroom as an 18-year-old in total amazement.
Yeah.
Because number one, I didn't really know who he was.
Okay.
And number two, he was like one of the first people I ever in my life saw firsthand beat up on a white boy. I never forget it. The white boy said something and asked Dr. Clark a stupid question, and Dr. Clark's fashion, and mind you, Oshie, I didn't really know what it was, to be honest, to beat up on a white boy in history. So just imagine what I felt, because you know who put it into context for me when I was witnessing? Mm-hmm. And this is going to blow you away. Bob Law on Night Talk.
Oh, right.
He did the same thing to a Jew, and I was then able to understand what Dr. Clark did to the white boy. Because let me tell you something, Oshie, I'll never forget it. It was the smoothest display of beating down a white man with no emotion at all. I mean, Dr. Clark, when he spoke to him, he didn't down talk him or anything. Mm. He just destroyed him.
Yeah.
And I mean, hey, when I used to see Dr. Clark over the course of time, I would always laugh and say to him, Dr. Clark, why you beat up on that student like that in class? And he would just look at me, because he could still see at that time and give me the look. And then I would look at Dr. Clark and I would say, he deserved it, Doc.
Yep.
You know, so have a good one, though.
All right, take care.
All right.
Peace. Hello. Good afternoon, my brother. How you doing?
Hey, good afternoon, Baboji. How you feeling?
I just
joined in late, so I'm just chiming in, listening to the conversation.
Okay, we're talking about genocide.
So I'll catch you on
yep.
next time. Yes.
Okay, you bet. Hope to catch you on. I hope you have time on Friday.
All right, brother.
All righty. Very Peace. Good. All right. Bye.
Hey, what's up, my brother? How you doing?
Baba Ochi, how, you know, give thanks for life, man. We ain't got a lot of time, but so I hope you excuse me. I just want to read something to you very quickly,
sure,
if you don't
please.
Mind, on your
Go
genocide
ahead.
Thing. Yeah, it's called The Descriptive Introduction of Silent Weapon. Everything that is expected from an ordinary weapon is expected from a silent weapon by its creators, but only in its own manner of functioning. It shoots situations instead of bullets, propelled by data processing instead of chemical reaction, open brackets, explosion, close brackets. Originating from the bits of data instead of grains of gunpowder from a computer instead of a gun, operated by a computer programmer instead of a marksman, under the orders of a banking magnate instead of a military general. It makes no obvious explosive noises, causes no obvious physical or mental injuries, not obviously interfere with anyone's daily social life, yet it makes unmistakable noises, causes unmistakable physical and mental damage and unmistakable interferences with daily and social life, i.e. unmistakable to a trained observer, one who knows what to look for. The public cannot comprehend this weapon and therefore cannot believe that they are being attacked and subdued by a weapon. The public might instinctively feel that something is wrong, but that is because of the technical nature of the silent weapon. They cannot express their feelings in a rational way or handle the problem with intelligence. Therefore, they do not know how to cry for help. They do not know how to associate with others to defend themselves against it. When a silent weapon is applied gradually, the public adjusts. They adapt to its presence and learns to tolerate its encroachment on their lives until the pressure, that's the psychological and economic, becomes too great and they just crack up. Therefore, the silent weapon is the type of biological warfare. It attacks the vitality, options, and mobility of the individuals of a society by knowing, understanding, manipulating, and attacking their source of natural energy and their physical, mental, and emotional strengths and weaknesses. Baba Ochi, I don't know what that sounds like to you, but it's taken from a document which is described as Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
To me, mm-hmm. it's most profound because
it
just sums up exactly what's taking place. And where it suggests that the public don't cry for help. You know, on these platforms in this country, you get the same callers in the place I live. You get the same callers, the same people ringing all the time. When I listen to the platforms on your side, of the same pattern of behavior, mm-hmm. the same people sure. ringing. So I always often wonder what's happened to the rest of them. But what's happening to the rest of them, they don't really know exactly what the document says. They don't really know how to cry for help. They don't really know how to associate with other people. And people say, oh, they're silent listeners, instead of encouraging them not to be silent, because silent is a form of implied violence. Mm. So what I'm saying is, when you talk about genocide, what's very interesting to me, and I've said this for a while, it's interesting how we often see the pain in others, quick to talk about it, quick to discuss it, but we don't pain in ourselves. We don't really recognize the genocide which has been taken from our, which has been happening to us. In actual fact, genocide is not even the appropriate word. The word gen, taken from the word generation, and the word side, taken from the word to kill, is a Latin. The Latin for the word side is to kill or murder, right. meaning to murder or kill a generation. That what's happening to us right on this planet is you know, it's just mind-blowing. And I think that's why we don't talk about it, and we don't really deal with it. There's not a day since we've come out of Africa they haven't killed off generations of us. Mm-hmm. Generations of.
Yes.
You know, I don't even think we even realize.
And yet we're almost. Do you ever hear this comedian named Robin Harris? Robin Harris, a good comedian, died kind of young, but he created just like a lot of comedians, they have a little tagline. His tagline was when he was kids, and there was a group of kids, and they were calling themselves Bebe's kids. We Bebe's kids, and Bebe meant the reference to some woman who was out. And this other lady was trying to babysit them, and they would say, "We Bebe's kids. We don't die. We multiply, you know, because we Bebe's kids." And the fact is,
is that who, that's who we are. We are Bebe's kids. We're the youngest population, Brother Paul, on the planet. No population, group of population of ethnic, so-called cultural groups is younger than us. And our potential for human development and growth is greater than all of them. You got many of the European cultures, they're old. That's why they suffered a lot at the beginning of the pandemic, because their populations were old and they already had preconditioned situations, you know? And so, to me, if we can harness that energy of that youth and educate them and instill in them the right mindset of respect for one another and trust with one another, willing to work with one another, support one another, oh, it's on. There was a...
I agree. But to that point there, right, that's an uphill struggle when we're using a curriculum, right, which is supplied to us by our adversaries, despite the fact that we have schools predominantly which maybe represent people like us, but yet we're using a curriculum designed, prepared, and maintained by our adversaries. Malcolm X, Amawali,
right.
As Malcolm has told us, if you send your children to your enemies to be educated, then you're a fool. And that is what we're doing. So the reality of getting the young to be our you know, winners, that's an uphill battle until we come to the conclusion that we've got to change these curriculums. We've got to stop sending the children to these schooling, fooling systems to be indoctrinated. We haven't come to that conclusion yet. 500 years, we have not come to that conclusion. If we did, Baba Ocha, I've asked you this question again. Please tell me who prepared the curriculum. What African-American wrote the curriculum where African-Americans can go to and study and remove themselves from the indoctrination? Give me the name. You won't be able to give me the name off the top of the head because you don't know it.
Well, there was the baseline curriculums, and that was with A.C. Hilliard, and that cultural group about 30-something years ago, you know, they created a baseline curriculum, you know, and the only school that was operating under it was a Portland, Oregon, ironically.
Exactly. Look, Babauchi, I know we haven't got enough time to really continue this, but the reality of it is that we need to recognize the genocide is not the genocide. I'm going to reframe that word. The absolute onslaught. Through the food, through the chemicals we have in our house, through the atmosphere, through the things they're spraying in the sky, the way they've got us under control, mind control, social control, all the rest of it, right? Yeah. The mere fact that we don't even speak our own language and all the problems we're absolutely in. The real murderers, nothing has happened to anybody on this planet worse than what's happening to us, and it's still happening and ongoing. And that's why we find it difficult to apply for reparations, because reparations is supposed to be applied for after the event. The problem with us, the event is still ongoing.
The event is still going. It is still ongoing. Yeah.
Okay? So thank you. Thank you for giving me the time to speak.
All right, brother. Peace to you, Brother Paul. Brothers and sisters, I appreciate this opportunity once again. We'll be back Friday. Next week, Wednesday, is September 11th, 9/11. And so we'll have our 9/11 program, 9/11 inside job, and further talk about that, because that's a serious indictment of this system, of this government. So, brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Have a blessed and wonderful day. So we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants. Think they can't do without, and they shown hell, damn it, don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahorie. Bibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious.
Peace, family.